Johnson is not going to get that man today. No, because I'm going to get him.
This is the Hagman and Hagman Report for today. It is Monday, December 7th, 2015. We're coming to you live from our radio and television studios located in beautiful Northwest Pennsylvania, where we're heard live every weeknight, Monday through Friday, that is, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, on the Global Star Radio Network. We're also simulcast on BTR, that's Blog Talk Radio, and you can watch us on live on YouTube. Just go to our official YouTube channel. In fact, just go to simply go to HagmanHagman.com, and there are links to watch us live on the right hand side. You can watch us, and there you can tune us in. And well, I'm Doug Hagman, I guess, at the helm with fellow investigator, researcher, and most importantly, my son Joe Hagman. Together, we are the Hagman and Hagman Report, what I like to call America's premier father-son investigative reporting team, and we do dig deep into the topics that the corporate mass media will never do. And many people adhere to the coincidence theory, of course, of history, theory of historical and current geopolitical events. We look at the conspiratorial aspect, dig deep into that, awakening others to the truth and the real news behind the headlines. Before we get into tonight's show, I want to remind everyone, you know, folks, portions of tonight's broadcast brought to you by Casper.com. You know, nothing's worse than a bad night's sleep. Well, Casper.com has got great mattresses at affordable prices. American-made, obsessively engineered, and what a great mattress for a wonderful sleep. Go to Casper.com/CFP Radio. That's Casper.com/CFP Radio. And enter the promo code CFP Radio. Or simply go to HagmanandHagman.com. There, you can directly go to our little world at Casper. That's Casper.com/CFP Radio, and coupon code CFP Radio for $50 off of your purchase. It's a fantastic deal. More on that later. Joe, it's great to have you. We have a packed house. Russ coming on later, but great.
It's going to be an interesting show, and Mr. Dizdar will be joining us in hour number two for the last 2 hours. Yep. And the theme for his appearance is the time of sorrows, and we'll be getting into Bible prophecy and how they relate to today's current events and geopolitical world that we see. And these beginning of sorrows are described in the Bible, Matthew 24, when Jesus begins to tell the disciples when they ask what will happen at the end of the world, and he says, first, be not deceived. And then he goes on to talk about the beginning of sorrows, the birth pains, and the second coming. And we are definitely in the beginning of sorrows, which is a precursor to the tribulation period. And we'll let Russ expand on that when he joins us. The first hour, we're going to get into Pearl Harbor, as this is the 74th anniversary of the Pearl Harbor attacks. And if you missed our pre-show overdrive, we gave a little bit of history, official history, and the truth to the event of Pearl Harbor. And I guess we can start there.
I want to announce, too, apparently I'm going to be on just for the news segment on Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie tonight. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. We're going to just briefly touch on...
You're going to be talking about an update on ISIS.
ISIS. Okay. All right. But yeah, you know, and folks, my father was a World War II veteran. My uncle, this Purple Heart from World War II. My father was in the Pacific Theater of Operation, which is Joe's grandfather. My uncle was in the was part of D-Day. But you know, Pearl Harbor. Many people. And today, and this is something I think is so important to today, you know, the revisionist history that we've undergone is incredible. Now, not everything is a conspiracy, but large events such as Pearl Harbor and 9/11, I think that we can really understand. At least I look at this and I think, wait a minute, this is not, I mean, the evidence is coming out right now where it's proving that there was foreknowledge of
the attack.
Yes,
and
yes.
And that is at the highest levels of our government, the President of the United States having foreknowledge weeks, even possibly months before. And, you know, this is so important to cover because you think about what has happened as a result of World War II. After World War I, you had the attempt to make the United Nations, only it was called the League of Nations, which failed. And also after World War II, the United Nations was established. The State of Israel was established. You had the Holocaust. And also, if you, as we talked about earlier, Albert Pike's letter to Mussolini, what was that, in
1871,
describes the three world wars that would happen. And, you know, people will question the legitimacy of that letter, but it's very accurate from everything we can see.
Even if it was at the time of 1871, because I've read some people say, well, it wasn't written in 1871. Well, even if that date was moved up, it still has a level of accuracy
World War I was until when?
1914.
So, I mean, you had World War I, World War II, and World War III described in that letter. And, you know, even if it was made after World War One, let's say,
or even if after two, look at what's happening with respect to the Muslims.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, as I said, what has happened as the result of World War Two, you know, we had the first nuclear bomb usage, the U.S. dropping two nuclear bombs on Japan after the war is over. You have Israel becoming a nation. You have the United Nations being established. And you really have, since then, the project for the new American century.
Hang on a minute. I got to turn on YouTube.
Blog Talk. Sorry, Blog Talk listener. We'll replace the audio. And I know you just missed everything from the beginning till now. We'll replace that after the show. This was a pivotal point and turning point in our history as a nation. This allowed so much change to come into our society. And, you know, and things we see today, even programs we see today in our government working, stem back to this incident. And as my dad said, the foreknowledge is the key here. Because what if it was prevented? What if they knew, you know, the attack was coming? The soldiers were told, at least, and the military knew. Because we know the president knew, according to new information.
You know, it's,
You want to do this like we did in the video, we can go over the official.
Yeah. Go ahead, and you give
it's quick.
And folks, really, what's important here, there's nothing new under the sun. That's really the key here. But what you've been taught, what we've been taught, what we've been inculcated with is revisionist history. We've been lied to. We've been lied to so much we don't even know what the truth is anymore.
That's right.
So go ahead, Joe.
This is the official story of Pearl Harbor. On December 7th, 1941, the Imperial Japanese Navy launched a surprise attack on the United States, bombing warships, several warships and military targets in Pearl Harbor, Hawaii. More than 350 Japanese aircraft attacked the naval base in two waves. They dropped armor-piercing bombs, launched torpedoes against U.S. battleships and cruisers. U.S. forces were unprepared, walking to the sounds of explosions and scrambling to defend themselves. The entire preemptive attack lasted only 90 minutes, and at that time, the Japanese sunk four battleships, two destroyers, and pummeled 188 aircraft, and the damage even more buildings, ships, and airplanes. Two of the battleships were later razed to return to service. Some 2,400 Americans were killed in the attack. Another 1,250 injured, and a huge shock was dealt to the United States. After the attack, Japan officially declared war on the United States. The next day, President Roosevelt delivered his famous infamy speech and signed a formal declaration of war against the Empire of Japan, Within days, Nazi Germany and the Kingdom of Italy also declared war on the United States, with the U.S. Reciprocated soon after. Which the U.S. reciprocated soon after.
So that's the official story. Now, the important things here, again, to remember that there's nothing new under the sun, and also to understand the pre-World War II sentiment. Now, this coming off of World War I, in the midst there, a number of years after World War I, but there was a poll done in 1940, and this is cited on page 174 of a book by Jim Mars titled Rule by Secrecy. So a 1940 poll showed that 83% of the public was against intervention in World War II. So a good pretext was needed to gain support from an intransient public. Now, let's look at our 32nd president, Franklin Delano Roosevelt. We talk about secret societies. We talk about Masonry. We talk about the Council of 300, Skull and Bones. Mm-hmm. Well, FDR was a 33-degree Mason. He was a member of the Committee of 300. He was a grandson of an opium smuggler, nephew of Frederick Delano, who was an original Federal Reserve boardman. He stayed in office since FDR, that is, for a period of 12 years, go figure. Of course, that was before the amendment limiting the terms. But from 1933 to 45, he chose Skull and Bonesman Henry Stimson as Secretary of War. Now, we know that the War Department, there was no Defense Department, it was the War Department, perhaps more aptly named. Stimson was also the Secretary of War to his brother Bonesman Taft from 1913 during the build-up to World War I. So the connections here with respect to secret societies, Skull and Bones, Committee of 300, Masonry, Masons, undeniable. Winston Churchill, he was a fellow Mason and a Committee of 300 member. He led us into World War II as well. Now, Roosevelt, an Illuminati bloodline wholly owned by the Council on Foreign Relations, set about provoking Japan into an attack with a number of measures, including the targeting of Japanese oil supplies. Now, isn't that interesting? Because what do we see today? We see kind of oil being used as a weapon. There was a congressional investigation heard back in 1945. The messages indicated a decision to go to war with the United States and Britain, though not with Russia. These were intercepted and decoded on December 3rd, 1941, 4 days before Pearl Harbor. But you know what? Message is missing. Other decoded messages gave Roosevelt prior warning of the attack. But see, the public, we weren't told, or the public at the time were not told, nor were the sitting ducks in the harbor, Pearl Harbor in Hawaii. There were, in total, Roosevelt had 8 different sources. The information from 8 different sources indicating a probable attack. Historian Robert Stinnett revealed the results of 17 years of research into the Pearl Harbor conspiracy in his book, Day of Deceit. You talked about this during the pre-show.
Yes.
Okay. The documents, there were more than 1 million documents that were obtained under the Freedom of Information Act concerning Pearl Harbor, which showed that knowledge of the Japanese plans was kept from commanders in Hawaii, the very same men who were ultimately made into scapegoats for what happened. And I mean, this is absolutely ridiculous.
And you know, you mentioned secret societies.
Yes.
The people around Roosevelt, as well as Roosevelt. And I picked this book up from the bookshelf here at the Hagman and Hagman Studios.
That's right.
America's Secret Establishment, An Introduction to the Order of Skull and Bones. There is a man named Stinson, Henry Stinson. He served as, I believe it was Secretary of
War. Yeah, he was Secretary of War. He actually had two.
But he is like the Zbigniew Brzezinski of back then, or the Henry Kissinger. he served on a number of government. He served for 58 years, was it? 42 or 58 years through seven different administrations, something like that. And they have a chain of influence here on, you know, going back from the 1890s through. And apparently was of huge influence on Roosevelt, as you mentioned, Roosevelt's ties to the CFR, I believe.
Yep.
And the secret societies have their paws, you know, have infiltrated every facet of our society, especially governments. And we still see that today, but this stuff that we see today was going on in the time of the Pearl Harbor attacks, where you had these secret societies. They were secret back then, really. You know, the coverage that we have on them today is more than any other time in history. And, you know, people really didn't start exposing them until, what, the 70s, 80s. Stuff started to come out.
I mean, well, yeah.
A few people have in the past. But, you know, the influence that these people wield, the satanic elite, is immense, and the responsibility they have for most of the conflicts and problems of the world, the blame goes to them. They are the ones who have crafted the policy. And I wonder how many years before World War II Pearl Harbor was decided on. You have that book of a quote from the book of Mr. what was his name? 10 years before Pearl Harbor, he said that World War II would most likely start around 1940 with an attack from Japan.
Well, it's interesting because...
Starting with the German-Polish...
right, and I just put up on the... Or Eric just put up on the on the screen. The weekend before Pearl... Or the follow-up before Pearl Harbor, there was a newspaper, the Hilo Tribune Herald, ran a headline, "Japan may strike over weekend." Now, this would be akin to, of course, saying, think back to 9/11. Let's say a weekend edition of the New York Times saying, you know, World Trade Center could be attacked, or New York could be attacked by Osama bin Laden or by the Taliban.
And if we can, I just want to interrupt.
No,
taking a step back, you know, about the secret societies, the dark rulers, the satanic elite. You know, there is a quote here from 1946. "It may be said with great restraint that never since the dark and Middle Ages have there been so many powerful forces organized and alerted against the assertion and acceptance of historical truth as are active today to prevent the facts about the responsibility for the Second World War and its results from being made generally accessible to the American public." Mm-hmm. Even the great Rockefeller Foundation frankly admits the subsidizing of a core of historians to anticipate and frustrate the development of any neo-revolutionism in our time, and only difference between the foundation and several others is that it has been more candid and forthright about its politics. Mm. Talking about the Rockefeller Foundation, you know, subsidizing a core of historians to anticipate and frustrate things, you know, facts we have working against us. You know, universities that will do the tedious work of going through and revising history to fit what they need.
Indeed. You know, just so people don't think that, first of all, the relevance with respect to Pearl Harbor to today, if you look at the continuing course of criminal conduct within the criminal cabal or government, you'll see that there is a tie-in between what has been happening and through today. Again, there's nothing new under the sun. The criminal cabal, the secret societies, the puppet masters of the political puppets are working behind the scenes. And what you saw earlier was the Honolulu Advertiser front page headline on November 30th, 1941, which, despite all of the warnings, the military was told to go to the lowest level of readiness. The ships in the harbor were lined up in tight rows, and the aircraft in the airfields were put in circles, nose tip to nose tip. Now, Alex Jones gets into this in his documentary, 9/11 Descent into Tyranny. And we see the same things happening with respect to aircraft carriers in 1941 and Pearl Harbor through today. History will show, and it does show right now, that numerous cables have been, were intercepted. Well, 2 weeks before the Pearl Harbor attack on November 25th, 1941, there was a conversation that took place between Secretary of War Henry Stimson and Roosevelt. Roosevelt wrote in his diary, and this is important, and this diary, it's available in the Presidential Library for Roosevelt. The question was how we should maneuver them into position of firing the first shot, meaning how should we maneuver Japan into the position of firing the first shot without too much danger to ourselves.
Yeah.
It was desirable to make sure the Japanese be the ones to do this, so there would remain no doubt in anyone's mind as to who were the aggressors. And what we want to do all the time, is make others look like the aggressors.
In 1940, after the election of President Roosevelt, he moved the Pacific Fleet Center from California to Pearl Harbor, Hawaii, after he became president. And, many can speculate as to why he did that, but to make it easier for us to have a place to fly in and out of on military missions, yes, but at the same time, you know, look what was attacked and how it was attacked. And
could that have
been done if it was still on California?
Hmm.
I don't think it would have been.
No, perhaps
I know,
not.
I mean, with the technology they had back then, it wouldn't have.
But you had mentioned earlier about the book, The Shape of Things to Come. This was Winston Churchill, who was a member of the Committee of 300 and a Mason. Well, H.G. Wells wrote The Shape of Things to Come in 1933. That's a book that he wrote. He wrote that the Second World War would start around 1940, and that would originate or be caused by a German-Polish dispute, which the European theater, that's basically the start of it. Now, one must ask the question, were Albert Pike, H.G. Wells, and other Masons prophetic? Were they prophets, modern-day prophets, in their visions of the future? Or were they knowingly, actively working toward an already established objective? You know, it's interesting because, Joe, and when we talk about this, we have people, and I'll get emails even to this day saying, you know what, Doug, your DHS insider was so wrong. So wrong. So off on everything.
I wish that were the case.
Well, because it was always pointed out where, Civil War didn't happen, never happened. That Civil War that you were talking about here in the United States didn't happen. Now, I'm not being defensive on this. I'm doing this to illustrate a point here because I don't really care what people, you know. I'm told the information and I share it. You believe it or not?
Do we have a Civil War like we did in the 1800s, where you have one geographic part of the country fighting against another? No. Is there people warring in each city every day along racial or economic lines? Absolutely.
Yeah.
And has that increased exponentially? Yes, it has.
Yeah, and that's kind of what troubles me. Not the accusations of being incorrect, and I'm thankful that we don't see a hot shooting war out there with people dying in the streets. I'm thankful for that. But you know, the timing is not necessarily what's important here. What's important is the in-game objectives. Because if this didn't happen on December 7th, 1941, it might have happened on, you know, January or June 25th of 1942. I mean, who knows? So the timing isn't, to me, is not as critical as, I believe, as the foreknowledge. And this is what we're looking at. So, with respect to the DHS insider that had given me all this information. You know, there were things that are happening and didn't happen, at least not in the manner in which he said happened.
Right.
But can we see things shaping up that way?
I mean, this book is great. In the very beginning, it says there's an establishment history, mm-hmm. an official history, which denominates history textbooks or dominates history textbooks, trade publishing, the media, and library shelves. The official line always assumes that events such as wars, revolutions, scandals, and assassinations are more or less random, unconnected events. By definition, events can never be the result of a conspiracy. They can never result from the premeditated, planned group action. An excellent example is the Kennedy assassination. Within 9 hours of the Dallas tragedy, TV networks announced the shooting was not a conspiracy. Regardless of the fact that a negative proposition can never be proven, and that investigation had hardly begun. Woe betide any book or author that falls outside the official guidelines. Foundation support is not there. Publishers get cold feet. Distribution hit and miss or non-existent.
Well, there you go. You know, I mean, and I think that we need to understand what's really taking place. Now, as we look at back 74 years to the December 7th, 1941 attacks, that was, it's hard, it would really be hard, I mean, it's hard for me to believe that you would have anyone that would sacrifice the lives of any innocent, or any people in Pearl Harbor, the soldiers and such. I just can't, it's so difficult for me to believe. But, you know, I mean, things do happen, and we've seen this happen subsequent to that time in terms of the false flags. And we have to be clear, I think, too, what false flags would, or, you know, mean. Now, when we say false flags, it's not necessarily something made out of whole cloth. It's an event made out of whole cloth. It could be an event either allowed to happen or an event known, somebody knowing an event in advance.
Yeah.
Or, you know, some level of complicity, not necessarily active, but it could very well be passive as well. So, it's not, it doesn't mean that we've got people that are pulling the triggers. It means that people know about things.
Right. They say so. They use this, the devil theory of history. Using this methodology, they're going to argue this book and present detailed, precise evidence, including names, etc., that the only reasonable explanation for recent history in the U.S. is that there exists a conspiracy to use political power for ends which are inconsistent with the Constitution. This is known as by official historians as the devil's theory of history, which again is a quick, cheap device for brushing facts under the rug.
Very interesting. Well, and again, just to bring this forward to today, what we're seeing here is, in my view, preparation. Well, as we saw back in 1941 and after the war, you know, the world, think about this. Okay, think about this. After Pearl Harbor, we entered the war. After the war,
nuclear bombs were dropped.
Yeah. Now, Harry Truman was also a 33rd degree Mason. And I know I'm looking at the clock here as well, so I want to kind of make sure make sure all of this is kind of wrapped up. But he was under the direction of Stimson as well. I mean, Stimson had really spanned from 1911 to 45, basically. But he dropped, as you said, Joe, Truman dropped two atomic bombs on Japan. Therefore, at least historically, according to the history books, ending World War II. Well, Japan was already surrendering, and they had already surrendered to the United States in terms of their terms and conditions before the bombs were dropped in Hiroshima and Nagasaki.
Yep.
But so why did, you know, we drop these bombs?
Some say payback.
Well,
some say testing.
How about conditioning, perhaps? You know.
Yeah. You always talk about when a U.S. president is first elected and takes a seat in the White House, how he could be sitting down or sat down to watch the Kennedy assassination.
Yeah, sure. Well,
no, this is another example.
Very much. You know, the background to Truman, the Freemason placeman who refused to accept Duran's terms of surrender, essentially. That's what he did. He ordered the atomic bombs being dropped, then accepted the surrender on the same terms that he had refused before. So Japan comes to him and says, look, okay, here, we're going to give up. Truman refuses them, drops the bombs, and then accepts the surrender on the same terms he had refused before. Now, history books won't tell you this. And don't shoot the messenger, meaning us. Okay, we're just telling you what your history books don't tell you. The bombs were dropped because as one phase ended, another one really began. And what was that next phase but the Cold War? The Cold War. It was so much easier to engender the fear necessary for that. If people had seen for themselves what happens when one of these devices explodes. You get the picture here? Prior to 1945, when Truman dropped the bombs, it was all hypothetical, basically. Oh, sure, you had the testing and such, and you had the potential for damage, but imagine that.
Don't forget the Manhattan Project.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
done in secret, developing these nuclear capabilities to make these bombs.
Right. So to usher in the Cold War, let's drop an atomic bomb, not just one, but two, and then create the communist Cold War enemy, that being Russia, and threaten and have the children in the 50s hide under the desk, the duck and cover drills, okay? Now think about that for a moment. Because had Hiroshima and Nagasaki not happened, would the level of fear of nuclear war be that pronounced between America and Russia? Would we know what we were fearing? Just a thought, okay?
Yeah.
So then what happened? Well, after the war, the world was just absolutely incredibly devastated. I mean, there was no morale. There was a spiritual and physical vacuum there. Now, what happened next? Well, the banks then made vast fortunes lending money to governments to rebuild societies that we broke, or that were, I shouldn't say we broke, that were broken by war. The same war that the same banks funded. Now, I know that's very hard for a lot of people to believe, but all wars are bankers' wars. So the bankers fund the wars, they fund the destruction, and then they turn around and fund the rebuilding of what was destroyed. Both sides. It's a pretty good gig if you can get it, right?
People, countries, nations are still paying interest on the debt from World War II.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah. I mean.
Yeah. So, you know, again, I don't. This is not to take anything at all away from the servicemen, the people who died in Pearl Harbor. Not at all. There were victims just as much as anyone. I mean, but we have to understand the mechanics, the machinations of the Luciferian elite, the Illuminati, and this is really kind of an excerpt, an exhibit A in the court of life when it comes to this. The historians of today, at least the honest ones, really admit that FDR and his corrupt Masonic associates knew well in advance of the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor that capitulated the United States in the war. That's just, they knew that. The Illuminati wanted World War. The American airmen, soldiers, and sailors who died 74 years ago today, well, they were considered cannon fodder necessary to precipitate our entrance into World War II.
Henry Kissinger says it like this: military men are nothing but dumb, stupid animals to be used as tools for foreign policy.
Well, exactly.
For foreign policy.
You know, the Luciferian elite, the people in power, and I don't care whether it's Clinton or Bush or Obama or their puppet masters, it doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. Because the cabal is the same. Their cold-blooded, maniacal agenda is to engender chaos and destruction in a never-ending, really, alchemical process of bringing Ordo, chaos, order out of chaos to the elite. Well, to the elite murder, it's just business as usual. That's all it is. Just business as usual. And you see, here we are today, 74 years after the Pearl Harbor bombing, December 7th, coming up on the, coming up here on the new year. Obama flopped his gums out, yesterday, last night, in case you missed it.
I did miss that.
Yeah. Well, now Obama is, they're rolling out a new, Joe, you talked about this, a new alert system.
Oh, yeah.
System of alert. We can bump into that because this all ties together.
I got to restart my
all right.
internet browser Homeland Security Secretary Jay Johnson has announced a new or a revamped terror alert system. And what they plan to do, I'm able to get my browser back up.
That's fine, but I guess really I think let me know when you're ready. But what we need to do is we need to understand where we're at and prepare accordingly, spiritually and mentally, physically.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, all of these are important. I don't believe for one moment that we as Christians are going to escape what's coming, the tribulation. If you want to believe that, that's fine. It's to me, it's not a matter of salvation.
Right.
Therefore, if you want to argue the points, go ahead.
And while we're all here, we're still in this together.
Right. That's right. So, it doesn't what you believe. And see, that's the other thing, too. And people need to understand this. When we talk about secret societies, it doesn't matter what you believe. It doesn't matter if you believe the number 13, for example, is an occult, is valuable in the occult. It doesn't matter if you believe 3 is a perfect number. It matters what they believe. It doesn't matter if you don't believe in occult numerology, but they do, the Luciferian elite. So it's important. If it's important to them, then it should be important to us to understand, at least understanding the playbook. Now, if you don't want to understand any of that, that's fine. It's not, okay, not really a problem. And I mean that. Go ahead.
Off topic question here. Aftershave or cologne?
What are you talking about?
I smell a real heavy aroma. Cologne?
I don't smell anything.
Okay, just wondering.
Oh, you know what? I'll tell you what. The HVAC system is actually pumping through. Now, that's the HVAC system that's pumping through the ion. There's an ionization in. Does it smell like
cologne? It smells like cologne, yeah. I just got a big whiff of it maybe a minute ago, and I was just wondering.
No, you're always complaining about being hot behind the lights here. I do something good. And
No, actually, that's fine. I just wondered.
It's actually a little it's an attachment to the HVAC system. All right.
Okay. To the Homeland Security announcing a new terrorist alert system, U.S. Homeland Security Secretary Jay Johnson said on Monday he would soon announce changes to the national alert system to warn the public about terrorist risks. The changes come amid fresh concerns that terrorism in the United States after last Wednesday's shooting in San Bernardino, California, although they were not specifically prompted by it, President Barack Obama has called the shooting in which 14 people were killed an act of terrorism. Johnson proposed revising the alert system after 5 U.S. service members in Chattanooga, Tennessee, were killed in July in a shooting that has also been investigated as terrorism. We need to get a new system with an intermediate level, Johnson said at a security forum on Monday, adding that he planned to outline specific changes in the coming days. The National Terrorism Advisory System is triggered by specific credible information and a possible threat. The NTAS in 2001 replaced by a color-coded alert, replaced a color-coded alert system, but Johnson said more changes were needed. We need a system that adequately informs the public about what we are seeing, Johnson said.
You know what it's going to be? I know. It's going to be a rainbow. It's going to be all the colors of the rainbow.
Just an expanded color system.
Well, it's going to be the rainbow, kind of like the rainbow flag, but it's going to be the rainbow, and there will be a LGBT person, transgendered person, holding the rainbow flag, and telling you which color you should pay attention to. So the level of fear.
Hey, that's not a bad idea. Maybe they'll take that under advisement. They have not laid out a plan for what or how they're going to revamp or replace the old system, but they do say, Josh Earnest says, the press secretary, you should not consider this a replacement of the program, but rather some important reforms of the program that would allow it to be more effectively used to communicate with the American public. They go on to say that they need to do a better job.
Well, the White House
of reforms making it easier to communicate with the public about security threats.
Well, the White House will light up and like the specific LGBT color, and then maybe we'll have. Well, I smell it too. What the heck is that?
It is strong. I don't know. It just kind of came out of nowhere.
Wow.
That's why I had to ask, you know.
Maybe someone outside the studio is poisoning our HVAC system.
Well, it's not.
Yeah,
good.
I know. Anyway. But no, so I think that the rainbow color system is going to be our new alert system, and Caitlyn Jenner is going to be the spokesperson
for the
emergency alert system.
Glamour magazine, so.
But
it makes sense.
Yeah. No. You know, it's really we are to be in a. Islam is a threat. Islam is an absolute threat, and we have to understand that.
Yes, and if I may,
but
John McTiernan will be on Thursday.
Yes,
and he is fluent in Arabic. He knows the Quran.
Right,
and he
I've
is
spoken to him a
going
couple
to
times.
Get
fantastic.
He's going to be getting into some depth. Concerning the Muslims and Islam and the ideologies, the goals, and whatnot, more so than we've had on the show before. I mean, he's going to lay it out there.
Right. And he's a very intelligent guy, let me tell you.
So,
okay, well, no, I just want to let people know that we are to be in fear. See, I've questioned this. Folks, have you questioned, for example, why... the attacks in why the attacks in San Bernardino? Why?
Well, you know, JD sent us an interesting video. It's about 2 minutes 48 seconds.
Right.
It's in Egyptian. It's an Egyptian TV host.
Okay.
Talking about the call of California terrorist attacks, and he says that that Obama needs to resign and. Turn himself in. He says this due to a number of issues, but the one main one I saw is 2 days before the attack, Obama came out and said that there is no threat to the American public. And he says in doing so, you know, you put the people, they're not on higher or their highest alert. They're not, you know, looking out. Same with the intelligence agencies, same with the other government agencies. But it goes on to say that, he says, America will pay the price in a way that we can't imagine due to Obama, the liar, supporting the terrorists. Not only is he an ally of the terrorists, this Obama deserves to stand trial. If the American people, by the way, the American people is our friend. We're not against the people who are very respectful. And I'm reading the
teleprompter,
of this transcript. Says, we have no problem with the American people whatsoever. Our problem is with the President, Obama, and the Congress. Obama should be sent to the guillotine. But he does say this. 3 days before the attack in San Bernardino, the attack was on a Wednesday. And on Monday, he appeared and lied, like he always does, that liar.
Yeah. Yeah.
All the allies of terrorism are liars, he says. He said there is no threat to American citizens.
Oh, well, see, that's wrong, okay? There is a threat, and it's a threat from within.
As if he was trying to cover what was coming to happen. I suspect Obama is connected to the terrorists who carried out the attack.
Well, okay, there we go. Yeah, you know...
or video.
It's not that Islam is not a threat. Islam is a threat because they made it a threat. That doesn't mean it's not inherently threatening. It certainly is. Islam is a cult of death, and people might take issue with that, but I don't believe one can. It's in the surahs, it's in the Quran, it's in the hadith. I mean, we've got the documentation, so it's really not a religion. It is a cult by definition. And if you want to send me hate mail on that and put us the right or what is that? Right wing hate watch or hate watch? What's that thing called? Right, whatever
that we run the hate
yeah,
watch.
Yeah, hate watch and a Southern Poverty Law Center, because we are stating the truth. And go ahead, if you want to bounce us off the air for stating the truth, go ahead.
Oh yeah, you know, the Loretta Lynch Attorney General.
There we go.
She stated last week that any anti-Muslim speech that edged towards violence would be prosecuted by her office. She walked that back today.
Yeah, she did, but not before getting the pressure. Because, you see, okay, Islam inherently violent, inherently evil. We will kill the deniers and unbelievers.
Yeah.
That's completely acceptable, because that is a cultural slash religious slash even a political system. Yet we, as Americans, can't say, wait a minute, this is what they teach. If we bring that up, then of course we're guilty of hate speech, and we can't have that. Lynch is a puppet of, I mean, Obama and Jared have their hands so far up her puppet skirt. Don't worry, Eric. Eric was like, where's that red button? Where's that button? But anyway.
You know, it's interesting. There's a headline on Judge San Bernardino terrorist investigated week before attack.
So what?
One of the terrorists in the San Bernardino incident was investigated one week before the attack.
See,
and then a drill.
We have,
I mean,
this. Yes, all the time. And at what point are people going to say, well, it's not a coincidence anymore? Now, again, this does not mean that Islam is not a threat. It is a threat. Please understand that. Where do I have it? Yeah, see, I got it right here.
Crescent moon rising?
Yeah.
I could have heard
all right.
That.
See that? Okay. On the back here, it's got my name only because, well, I painted it, put on it. No. He asked, this book is Crescent Moon Rising. It's by Paul Williams. And this explains the threat of Islam. All right. This is published a number of years ago. I don't know, 5 years ago. But we, the Islamic transformation of America, Paul Williams is ahead of the game on this. And I remember people saying, oh, Paul Williams, he's an idiot. Well, by the way, welcome to Islamberg. Yeah. And there's an entire chapter here based on Islamberg.
I'll say this. You know, Glenn Beck, when he was on Fox News, did a good job in explaining this one aspect of our current events today. This is the caliphate. And although it hadn't picked up, nobody else has picked up on it in the mainstream.
Right.
That was one teaching that he gave that was very important for the mainstream media. But people don't understand it and won't understand it. You know, this is their goal of it's a one world system, and it's one world under Islam to the Prophet Muhammad as what they want, and you convert or you die.
Right, but the see and okay, there
and terror
are
terror is separate from that. You know, I believe in a big way, but it is used as Islam is used as a tool of terror. But the people who pull the strings of the terror are separate from Islam.
I don't believe the average Muslim has the brains, the intelligence, the wit, the abilities to do what they've done. All right, I just don't believe that.
Stupid?
My statement stands as stated. Okay, so you. And certainly with a surveillance apparatus like America, like France, that we have, I believe that there has to be some level of complicity or facilitation of some kind. But see, it's Islam, I just use the example, like a rabid dog. You've got a rabid dog. You own a rabid dog, and I love dogs. But let's just say you got a rabid dog. You know it's going to go out and destroy and bite and do stuff, but you don't know with precision what it's going to do. In a crowd, let's say you release it into a mall, you don't know if it's going to go into the Gap or Banana Republic or JCPenney, but you know it's going to go out there and do some bad stuff, right? So you might control the timing. You might control the opening of the gate, the cage, but you don't certainly control all the little parts of that. So that is Islam and the people that are lifting the gate up and pushing the dog out, or the several rabbit dogs. Well, or we'll even use, because I don't like to use that, alligators or crocodiles, whatever, depending on where you live. Yeah, you let them out. You know they're going to be snapping, or cheetahs, or some, pick some animal. But you get the idea. So that's kind of what we're dealing with right now. And that's the end game. But the end game is to bring everyone under the umbrella of a one-world religion, one-world political system that...
In Manly P. Hall's Secret Destiny of America, he said the world's first Democrat was Akhenaten, the Pharaoh. And he said that the first social consciousness... the first man became civilized when he developed a social consciousness, or civilization as a collective state. And he goes on to say that the life of the isolationist is a deterrent to himself and a menace to all others. And Akhenaten, in his Hall's book, is said to be the world's first Democrat, the world's first social conscious, the realist in democracy, humanitarian, and internationalist. And we'll have more on this later, because I'm doing a very in-depth study on this.
Okay, good.
Feral. But back to San Bernardino
shootings. Wait a second. Did I not make myself clear? Islam is inherently evil. I don't know how else to say it. Absolutely. Islam is inherently evil and inherently violent. I don't know if I can make it any more clear than that, unless I write it in Korean and put it up.
Amongst the Sunni and Shiite difference. Look at the violence there amongst themselves. Sure. Is horrific. Farouk Saeed, this is a name that I think you mentioned before anyone, Dad, on our pre-show.
I did. I just inverted
on the shooting, active shooting pre-show.
Last and first name.
Yeah.
Screwed up.
Well, law enforcement officials in San Bernardino in Los Angeles investigated Saeed Farouk 1 week before the shooting on the Community Development Center on December 2nd, 2015. That left 14 dead and 17 injured, according to a review of the police communications immediately following the attacks. Federal and local authorities have insisted that neither of the attackers had aroused suspicion before the assault earlier this week or month, and that both Saeed and his wife, Malik, were unknown to law enforcement and U.S. intelligence. But conversations between law enforcement officials in the hours after the shooting leave a different impression.
Wait, I gotta ask you real quick before Russ comes on. Did you see Melissa Harris Perry have a meltdown over publishing her, what's her face? Her picture. Saying it was offensive to Muslims.
Which picture was that?
The picture of the dead shooter.
No, I didn't. I'll have to check that out, though. Write it down.
She was like saying, "Oh, this is terrible. It's an affront to Muslims." And
the last thing I heard her say,
I think she was very, 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 very upset.
There was a video weeks back.
I shouldn't make fun of people.
There was a guest on her show and he was talking about something, and he said the word "hard worker," and she said, "I don't know if you remember this, but she said, you know, every time I see the term hard workers, you have to be careful because you know it refers to slaves." And I just shook my head, and she said how she has pictures of, you know, African Americans in cotton fields in her office to keep her motivated.
All I can tell you is my black buddy's out there picking cotton out in the fields this morning. In fact, he wanted to drink, and I said no. Yeah, seriously, I'm sorry. All right.
So there was communications about this Saeed Farouk, before the shooting. And as we're going to break here, under the radar, Loretta Lynch, Attorney General Loretta Lynch appeared today to recalibrate her remarks she made last week regarding the Justice Department investigating hostile speech towards Muslims. When we come back, Russ Dizdar on this Monday, November 7th, 2015, on Global Star Radio Network. Stay with us. We'll be right back with Russ Dizdar from ShatterTheDarkness.net.
This is the Global Star Radio Network.